Hi and welcome to What's Next? Rethinking Architecture. I'm Therese, your host, and for this week's episode I have, as always, a super interesting guest for you. Studio Jakob Sellaoui, a young architecture office from Vienna. I'm super excited, so let's get started and have fun listening. Hello, good morning, Jakob. Thank you so much for taking the time. How are you today?
Thank you, Therese. Thank you also for inviting me. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good too, thank you. The weather is getting better. Yesterday it rained the whole day, but today it's better.
That's always a good sign, I guess.
Okay, before we start with the actual interview, please introduce yourself.
Sure. So my name is Jakob Sellaoui. I am an architect based in Vienna, and I have my practice now since, I would say, around 2016, 2017. And I'm also currently a lecturer at the Technical University of Vienna.
Okay, we will come back later to this. And we start the interview in general with some warm-up questions. Sure. And the first one would be, what's your favorite drink? Alcoholic, non-alcoholic?
Okay. So I have to say, I do like the kind of atmosphere of bars and the whole social situations that that occur in such environments. And because of the pandemic, I think this is not a big surprise. This wasn't possible. And a drink that I do always like to order is a gimlet. Mm-hmm. And so I've been trying to make that at home, but I have been told it's a pretty simple drink, but I still haven't managed to make one properly.
Yeah, but I think you're going to have some more time to try it before you can go to the bar again.
I hope not too long. Yeah.
If you could develop a new skill overnight, what would it be? Anything. It can be magic. It can be anything.
Well, I'd probably learn how to make such a drink, I would say.
Okay. You wouldn't want to fly or have laser eyes or something.
I'm pretty happy with my abilities. Yeah.
Okay. And then last question, what is your favorite hobby besides architecture?
What I also started, this is also recent, and I guess part of the whole pandemic situation was getting into cycling. So I got pretty religious, I think you could say, about it. I've been cycling almost every day now for about a year, yeah.
How long do you cycle then every day?
It's not too long. I mean, I go in the morning for around a half an hour or so before the day starts. And it's just a nice activity.
Oh, that's really good. Maybe I should think about it and start something before the day starts too.
I can recommend it.
I'm not an early bird. That's...
Well, you can, some people do it at night, so maybe that's an option.
That's my thing. Okay. You are a really young architecture office. Could you describe your first steps in becoming self-employed? Because I'm asking myself that question all the time. How do they do it? Where do they find their clients?
Well, I think... It's a mixture of, in some ways, I guess, being lucky and taking chances if they're presented to you. I remember I was studying in Tokyo. I did my master's in Tokyo at the Tokyo Institute of Technology, studying with Yoshiharu Tsukamoto. And at the time, I was still a student, and there was an old friend of mine. She basically left Europe and... he was on the road trip in the U.S. and decided to relocate to Nicaragua for some reason, and asked me one day if I would be interested in helping her to design a hotel, basically. And that's pretty much, you could say, I guess, the first built or major project I had. And from then on, I've been traveling back and forth to Nicaragua, I guess twice a year, you could say.
But that's super interesting. First question would be, why did you choose Tokyo?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I have to say also, I was born in the U.S. To an Algerian father and an Austrian mother. And I was raised in Tirol, basically, from the age of 7. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's always been somehow an element of travel or of feeling slightly dislocated in my personal history in some ways. And Tokyo has always been sort of a desired place since I was pretty young, I would say. And then comes this aspect of opportunities. There was an opportunity at the time. I saw you could do a master's in Tokyo. And this was mm-hmm. while I was still studying in my bachelor at the TU here in Vienna. Mm-hmm. And I basically took that opportunity. And I was there for 2 to 3 years. I went to Tokyo and finished my master there and had a very good time in Tokyo.
Wow. Did you learn the language?
Well, I, to be honest, I don't know how to speak the language properly. As far as I could get, was always ordering drinks and food. Basically, that's sort of the izakaya Japanese. That's what I call it. So it's a very basic skill in Japanese, I would say.
But that's super interesting. Starting your work life with a hotel. Were you excited? I mean, were you nervous about it? If you could manage that?
I think the advantage of starting when you're young is also knowing that you don't know a lot. So being naive in some ways and is an advantage, was an advantage at that time. So I thought it didn't make me nervous in some ways. It was very exciting. It was an opportunity to do work, and I just started, basically. I didn't really think much of it.
That's really super interesting. But you're not just an architect. You're also a teacher, a researcher, and you also do exhibitions. What are you currently working on?
Well, currently we're in the studio here. We're working on several projects in Vienna and the surrounding. And there's also a project in Portugal at the moment. They're basically renovation projects, you could say. They're renovation mm-hmm. projects. Some of them are new construction, but most of the work is are renovation projects. And I mean, there are different fields of engagement, I would say. I mean, there is the teaching part, there is the project-based work, and there is, of course, what you call research. They're all, I would say, different fields that kind of inform each other. And what I like about it is basically that they kind of keep each other in check, or they hold each other accountable. So if I write about something, I test it, or I have the building or the built project that in a way works as a vice versa to basically see if these things you're thinking, if they kind of hold up to reality. And for me, I think I should also mention that the way I see my own work is surrounded around this aspect of being a practice. And by practice, I mean being engaged in some ways in adding something to the real world or to the physical world. So practice in the sense as opposed to theory, let's say, just for the sake of theory, this is not something that I really work with. So theory and practice is, or you could say, two sides of the same coin.
What is most important to you in your work, in all your designs? Before we go to the exhibition later, mm-hmm. what is the most important part? Is there something like a most important part? Is there something you would like to transfer through your work?
I mean, there are of course parts that are important. I would call it concerns. There are certain concerns that I have in the work, and I think most of it is based on a certain observance. I remember it pretty much started. I think in Tokyo, where I would basically take photos of buildings and the surroundings that I was passing by every day, because I didn't really have an idea about Japan before. You know, I didn't know anyone. I went there, and I had to make sense of it somehow. So it was really based on observing surroundings and taking photographs, more as a kind of sketch, a mental sketch or a note in some ways. And I've always been kind of drawn to or interested in anonymous and unedited situations. And these were basically the things that I've been recording. So why do the things look the way they look like? And especially these situations, there were never designers or architects or professionals involved. They were just people more or less living their lives and engaging with their surroundings. And this is something that always fascinated me. And this is, I guess, sort of in some ways, the origins of my own design process or my own thinking about architecture is surrounded around these aspects of what you could call the everyday or the informal or the anonymous way of understanding space.
Does it have to do anything with the exhibition Weak Potentials? Because it's like hashtag good enough architecture. It sounds familiar. Yes.
It is. I mean, of course, it's part of a process, of a work process. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the exhibition project, the Weak Potential. This is a project that was invited by last year by Magazin, which is an exhibition space for contemporary architecture in Vienna. Mm-hmm. And sort of the beginning thoughts were really, what if architecture were to start from a place of inadequacy or shortcoming or a kind of a deficiency, as opposed to maybe this approach that always seeks to offer, let's say, a perfect solution for a kind of a problem or something like that. And there's also kind of against this ideology of that there is an ideal or a perfect situation you can arrive at. And this was pretty much, I guess you could say, the starting questions for that exhibition.
And how important is nature to you, also in terms of good enough architecture? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, how should we build? How can architecture operate nowadays? And maybe that's also bringing architecture back to its purest form. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I think what I could say about it is that I think there's a, I mean, for me at least, I believe there's a kind of a confession necessary on part of architecture, and this is pretty much what I've been trying to work on with the exhibition. And what I mean by confess is that pretty much also like human beings, I think architecture in some ways would have to confess that it self is deeply flawed and full of contradictions, and that it can never get everything right in some ways. So it always is full of contradictions. Mm-hmm. And the question is there a potential within all of this? can weakness or fragility, if you will, can that be a potential for developing architecture? And you mentioned nature. There was an exhibition project as well last year on invitation by the LA Forum for Architecture and Urbanism, mm-hmm. Created by Wendy Jill Martin and co-created by Nina Briggs. And it was a group exhibition, and because of the events of not being able to have a exhibition indoors because of the pandemic, that was basically just unfolding. It was last year, I think in June. I think it was planned for June. It happened later on then. And the idea was to do it in the city. So all of these participants, they just had different sites that were either chosen or were assigned or were suggested by the curatorial team. And my idea was to use a backyard of a residential house, basically, because during the time, I should also mention, I was in Los Angeles at the time for the Mark Schindler residency, which was about half a year. Mm-hmm. And I was very interested in these sort of leftover spaces in the city. LA is a place where the prices for real estate have pretty much skyrocketed, I guess, over the last 10 years, and are continuing to do so. And space is sort of a very valuable resource, or land, you could say, is a very valuable resource. And I was always wondering, well, what happens with all of these spaces that are sort of neglected or overseen or not really used or utilized for living purposes or different kind of purposes. And this is sort of, I guess, aligned, you could say, with infrastructural space. So what do we do with all of these systems and infrastructures that that we kind of create to uphold a certain way of living, a certain kind of lifestyle? And I discovered this backyard space, which had a kind of a staircase that nobody really knew. How did it come there? What was the idea? What was it designed for? What was its purpose? So it was really a place that that had a lot of question marks. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be a great you know, place to do something. And the proposal was then, or the installation was called a Space for Doing Nothing.
Yeah.
Also, in some ways, aligned with this idea of, do we always have to do something? Does always something have to happen? Mm-hmm. And also pretty much, I guess, you could say, related to this idea of the confession I was speaking about before. Mm-hmm. And the project is pretty much how architecture could be seen as not a detached or an isolated object, but is actually always deeply entangled with all kinds of also non-human realities that are, of course, always far from perfect in some ways. And how does architecture, or how can architecture kind of partake in this sort of dialogue with its surroundings, and maybe also see these infrastructural situations as being able to have spatial qualities and also suggest an architecture in some ways in its own right. So maybe also a kind of an architecture that is not per se created by humans. And that was pretty much the thoughts or these ideas that I had for that exhibition at that time.
I really much like the title, A Space for Doing Nothing. Because doing nothing always has this negative touch, but I don't think that's right. Doing nothing is maybe positive in some parts of life. Maybe sometimes you just have to do nothing.
I mean, it's true. I mean, there's also the question, is it even possible to do nothing or nothing at all? But something I was also thinking about when thinking about this title was, is it always something that has to be productive, or this idea of production more in relation with industry, mm-hmm. or with a certain kind of market thinking that one goes to an exhibition or one goes to a place and there always has to be some sort of event or some kind of program that one consumes. And well, the idea was here, the structure is pretty much just a like a tent, you could say. There's mm-hmm. there's no content, if you will. There is just the space itself and a certain view, and the architecture frames or kind of brings together that situation and kind of marks a certain space.
And did you actually try doing nothing there? Did you manage it?
Well, I have to say, this exhibition I haven't even seen in person. Because of Corona, basically, because of the pandemic, I wasn't able to be there. It was scheduled to happen earlier on, and then it was pushed back a few months. At that time, I was already back in Vienna, and it was kind of a project that was done very much on Zoom, and very much also by the help of the people and the team in Los Angeles. So the only idea I have about the project is seeing it through the photographs, mm-hmm. and talking with the people who have been there, who have seen it. So in that sense, maybe I have really done nothing, or I even haven't been able to do nothing.
How does your design process look like? Could you describe the process by means of an example? If you actually start, for example, mm-hmm. a hotel or whatever you're working on right now.
It's actually pretty similar. It does not really matter that much if it's, let's say, an installation for an exhibition or if it's a building. Mm-hmm. I would say the origins of the interest is, as I mentioned, in these very unedited situations, or these kind of situations that more or less happen by chance or happen without there being a designer present. So the process, or how I see my work, is basically responding to a situation. And I like the word response very much, because there is a given situation. In my opinion, there's always a situation. There's always something that's there. And what I do is responding in a way to such situations. And there's always things, concerns, either by a client or by certain building regulations or by a site or by whatever. And these things, they have agency in their own right. And they kind of frame a project, as you will. Mm-hmm. And the idea is not to sort of resolve it. I don't try to resolve these situations. I try to kind of respond or partake more in this idea of a dialogue. There are a lot mm-hmm. of things that are being said, so I'm also trying to add something. Sometimes it's better to be silent. Maybe you don't have to add things every time. Maybe sometimes it's just enough to be present. And that's, I guess, the thinking that I have when I approach a project. And what happens then in the studio is these situations are then kind of looked upon, or we first have to understand, what is it, who are we talking to, who are these actors, or what are the concerns that are that a project has. And that's pretty much that is the starting point. And then the way we work in the studio is then just to have a series of iterations, and we do a lot of variations of different kinds of compositions, you could say. So it's not so much based on an idea. The design project doesn't, it's not based on an idea. I often also say that I don't really work with ideas. I kind of work by responding to situations. So It is a design process that works very much with models. We have a lot of working models we use here in the studio.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, what CAD program do you use, for example?
So I use ARCHICAD.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay. Do you work with BIM?
Not so much.
But you're in the process or you don't need it?
It's something we're starting slowly now, yeah.
Oh, okay. And you start modeling with the cutter and the...
We have, exactly. It's basically very cheap, simple materials, cardboard and stuff like that, mm-hmm. paper. And that's how we just test things, and it's easy to change them. Basically, these models are also done very quick. It's not important that they have a kind of aesthetic quality. It's just it's like a sketch, you could say, mm-hmm. kind of a three-dimensional sketch. And there are drawings, of course, and it's a process of trial and error. And it's a little bit like if you go to see your eye doctor, and you get these glasses, and he always asks you, is it better or worse?
Yeah.
Better or worse. And then you arrive at a point where you don't really know, is it better or worse, because it's kind of the same. And that's when I know that we kind of are in the right spot. We arrived at a place. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how you could say, that's kind of the process behind it.
Hmm. And with all the background information you already gave us about yourself and your opinions, what means being an architect for you? Do I actually have to build something to call myself architect, or
I don't
can
think
I just
necessary.
Write about it or talk about it?
Sure. I don't think it's necessary. I think the great thing about doing architecture is that it's a pretty open field, and it's fair game. Everyone has the option to engage the way he or she wants to. And I can only speak for myself, of course. Mm-hmm. For me, being an architect is deeply focused around practicing in physical reality. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what I do. But as I said, it's not the only way to to be an architect, of course. That's that's my take on it.
Because I hear a lot of times, don't you want to be a real architect someday? And then I'm just asking myself, what means a real architect?
If there's a real architect, there also has to be a fake architect.
Yeah.
But what's a fake architect? I'm not sure.
Yeah. I'm not sure either. And if we take a look into the future, where are we going relating artificial intelligence? Do you think our profession has to change somehow or align to the technology?
I think it's always being done, if we want it or not. It's not so much, I think, a decision. It's something that just happens by the progress we're making in certain areas, I guess, especially regarding technology. Mm-hmm. My idea about all of this is pretty much that there has to be, in my opinion, a kind of an awareness of the limitations that that are given in some ways. And I think this is something we have all more or less realized through the pandemic or the last year, mm-hmm. that there is actually a line, there are boundaries, and there are also limitations. And I would probably go the other way. I wouldn't see technology maybe as something that will save us in the future, but maybe even the other way, maybe the future would have to be not more intelligent, but maybe more stupid in some ways. I think rather than becoming more and more intelligent, is that by realizing these limitations that in a way have always been there, they just have been brought to surface in a very uncompromising way. That architecture, in a way, has to rethink certain expectations. What do we have to deliver, or what does it mean even to build in some ways? Mm-hmm. And that's something I'm trying to give an answer for. The term I use for my own work is a good enough architecture. And a good enough architecture, in my opinion, is an architecture that is resourceful in some ways, that tries to use what's available and is very pragmatic about it, mm-hmm. and also accepts and acknowledges limitations that are given, and that we can't continue, to build the way we have been building for centuries, basically. And there is a kind of a hidden optimism in there. I don't mean that in a cynical way. I'm serious about that direction. And I think it is a possibility, at least. I see it as a possibility as for how architecture could operate.
And I have to come back to nature. Do you think we should make nature our only customer? And maybe artificial intelligence could be a big opportunity to do so. Because our buildings consist of so many very different individual parts, and maybe we should align more to nature and have a look to nature and rethinking this whole process of building in so many different parts.
I think absolutely. I think technology is plays a crucial role in even being able to do so. I think even if you look into new economic theories where nature itself is also seen as a resource and is also given a certain value in some ways, I think the same way or in a similar way, I think is necessary for architecture. So it's mm-hmm. not just a backdrop. It's not just something you put in an image that is that surrounds a building, but it's also a client in some ways. I would agree. I don't know if it's the only client, but it is a client for sure. I think it has always been a client, and it has been a client that has been neglected in many ways. And it would be a possibility would be to invite this client to the table, and also listening to the client and creating architecture that also involves that point of perspective.
Oh, that's a beautiful sentence. Last question. What is architecture for you personally? You already said a lot about architecture, but now maybe you can sum it up to one sentence.
Okay, well, I'll take the risk of disappointing with my answer, but
please no.
But I mean, for me, architecture and is something actually I thought about recently. With getting into cycling and all of this, if you do something repeatedly, it becomes mm-hmm. automatic somehow. It's a practice. It's something I practice, and it's something that that in a way just happens. So it's maybe very unromantic to see architecture that way, or how I see myself as an architect. I don't know if I if that is a good answer to end it, but
it is a really good answer.
I hope it is.
Thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure. What are your plans for today?
Well, it's sunny for the first time since weeks. It feels like it's been weeks since the sun has been out here in Vienna. We have a pretty bad winter here. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll try to get some sunshine if possible.
And to cycle some more.
Maybe.
Then thank you for your time again, and it was a pleasure.
Thank you, Therese. Thank you also for inviting me.
So, That was this week's episode. It was such a pleasure getting to know Jakob Szellaui. I hope you had as much fun as I had, and as always, please leave a comment. Until next time on What's Next. Ciao, ciao.